As we come to chapter 17 and 18, we are now looking at those bold judgments. We're looking more closely at the judgment upon Babylon specifically. So remember in chapters 15 and 16, we looked at the final judgment. The wrath of God is complete in this judgment of the bowls that are poured out. And we saw how the first angel poured out his bowl, and there was darkness over the kingdom of the Antichrist. And then there was these sores that broke out on the people that had received the mark of the beast. And then the judgment was poured out upon the throne of the beast, and the mentioning of the judgment that was poured out upon Babylon. And now as we come to these two chapters, we are again just getting a more specific look at the judgment upon Babylon. Now, this future kingdom of the Antichrist will, as all other kingdoms have always had, there will be a political, an economic, and a religious element to them. All of the kingdoms of the world throughout all of history have had those three elements. Believe it or not, even in those so-called atheistic kingdoms. I remember when I first went to Red Square, when Russia first opened up. And of course, Russia was an atheistic nation, and they had renounced faith in God and persecuted those who believed in God. But they had a God, and his mausoleum was right there in Red Square, and his name was Vladimir Lenin. And you could go there and you could observe him in his entombed state there, and people would go there to worship before that. So there's always been that connection, whether people acknowledge it or not. There's always been that religious connection. It has been much more obvious in the past, but it's still a reality today, and it will become a huge reality in the future kingdom of the Antichrist that's going to be established here on the earth. And so the 17th chapter deals exclusively with the judgment on the religious aspect of that final empire. And then chapter 18 deals more specifically with the judgment upon the political and the economic or the commercial aspect. So these two chapters are really one, describing this great judgment that's going to come upon this final world power that will arise. So, then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me, saying to me, "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication." So notice the reference here is to the great harlot. And whenever the scripture speaks of harlotry, it's always in reference to spiritual things. Well, occasionally it will speak of literal harlotry, but for the most part, it's speaking of a spiritual harlotry, idolatry, that sort of a thing. And so this is the great harlot, the fountainhead of all idolatrous and all abominable false religion. And so he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. Then the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And on her forehead a name was written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement. And so John just describes for us this image that he sees. And this woman, this harlot, all decked out, riding upon this beast. A thoroughly degrading picture. Notice, on her forehead a name was written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. So, Babylon, of course, the ancient city of Babylon, going all the way back to the earliest days of human history, the Babylon that was built by a man named Nimrod, who built Babylon and built Nineveh. That is the place where false religion originated. That was the epicenter of false religion. And every abominable, idolatrous thing that has ever existed in history from that point on to this very day can be traced back to there. It originated there. It really is an interesting study to look at the ancient religions of the world. Some of them are still presently with us today. But as you look at them, you will find that there are so many similarities. Oftentimes, the practices and the ideas behind certain gods and goddesses are identical. The only difference is the names. And what it shows you is a common origin. And if you were to take all of the religions of the world today, and really, you know, if you had the time, it would take a long, long time to do it. But if you were to dissect them, and if you were to analyze them, you would find that they are all ultimately very, very similar, and you would find that you could trace their origins back to Babylon. So this harlot that's being spoken of is the embodiment of all of these abominable doctrines and the practices that go along with them, and quite often, almost always, especially in the past, interestingly, false religion and perverted human sexuality were always joined together. It is a very interesting combination. And it's consistently there all the way through. So that's what we're talking about here. In this final empire that's going to arise out of what was formerly Rome, we would know it as formerly Rome, there's going to be this religious element. And it is going to be an amalgamation of all of the false religion in the world. Now remember, all of this is going to transpire after the church is removed from the earth. So the church is removed. The 144,000 Jews are sealed. And of course, we know from everything we've been reading that there's going to be a great number that no man can count that's going to come to the Lord during the tribulation period. But comparatively speaking, it's going to be a small number in relation to the masses of people who are going to follow the beast. But the center of that system that originates there in this final empire with the beast is going to be right there. And I believe that the center will be in Rome itself. Now, as we're going to go on and see, and as I've mentioned before, I think there are three key cities in the final stage of world history. And they are Rome, Jerusalem, and more I am believing that Babylon, literal Babylon, there on the Euphrates is going to be rebuilt. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. But notice the thing about this great harlot, that she is drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And it's been true in the past, and it will become true in the future, that there will be a wholesale slaughter of those who put their faith and their trust in Christ. And it's always been connected back to this false, abominable, idolatrous system. If you go back to the 1500s and the 1600s and read the stories of the Reformation and the persecutions and the martyrdoms of many of the saints, and so much of that was being perpetrated by the Roman Church at the time. And if you look at the issues that they were persecuting the saints over and putting many of them to death, the very issues are the things that really originated with this Babylonian system. They were putting them to death first and foremost for translating the Bible and trying to proclaim the scriptures over against the traditions and the practices of the church. And one of the great battles that these men faced was the battle over the Eucharist, the battle over the idea of transubstantiation, that the Eucharist itself actually was literally the body of Christ. And many of the reformers who were martyred, like Cranmer and Latimer and Ridley, these men were put to death over these kinds of issues. And many thousands, actually, were put to death. And so there is this persecution that's always followed along with this Babylonian system, and that's just one manifestation of it. But the angel said to me, verse 7, "Why do you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the 7 heads and the 10 horns. The beast that you saw was and is not, and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is." Now, I want to tell you guys, I have taught the book of Revelation probably 10 times over the years. And having taught it probably 10 times and having read it several more times, I still don't know what this is talking about exactly. But I have made a discovery. Nobody does. As I've told you before, as many commentaries as you read, you'll find that many different opinions. Now generally speaking, and when I say that, understand that I'm talking about the specific details. I think generally speaking, of course, we do have the ability to understand this book. That's why we're teaching it. If we couldn't understand it, we wouldn't teach it. But we can understand it generally, but when it gets down to the specifics, it's really hard to pinpoint what some of these things are referring to, because like I've told you before, I don't think that anybody's going to know absolutely until they're actually happening. So for us, to some degree, it's a guessing game. Now, maybe you remember when we were teaching through chapter 13 and we were talking about the beast that rises up out of the sea and the beast that rises up out of the land and all of that. Now, it's true that sometimes there's kind of a blur. There's kind of a blending. Sometimes it's a reference to Satan. Sometimes it's a reference to the beast himself. Sometimes it's a reference seemingly to the actual empire element or the kingdom over which the beast will reign. And it's not always easy to really determine what it is that's being spoken of. Now, most commentators, not all, but most, looking at this eighth verse, the beast that you saw that was, is not, and will ascend out of the bottomless pit, most of them refer to this as the empire itself, the return of the empire, if you will. So the imperialistic Roman Empire that had such power, and then it sort of, you know, went out of existence seemingly, but then it will rise again in the last days, and, you know, there will be this revival. And they look at this passage here, the eighth verse, as talking specifically about the empire. Now, as much as I would like to take that position, it just doesn't seem to me like that's what it's saying. It seems more personal than that. And a big problem with that is that it says that it was and presently is not. And you could not say that was the case when John wrote this book of Revelation, because the Roman Empire was still very much intact, and he was a victim of its persecution when he wrote this. So as strange as it seems to me, and notice here that the beast ascends out of the bottomless pit. More and more, it seems to me that the Antichrist, the one we commonly call the Antichrist, I gave you this lecture before that it's not really the Antichrist, so forgive me for contradicting myself. But the beast, the first one that rises up out of the sea, more and more, it seems to me that what we're talking about here is a demonic spirit that... Of course, we've talked about the dragon, and it's clear who the dragon is in chapter 12. The dragon is that serpent of old, the devil, Satan. But the beast, here it says the beast ascends out of the bottomless pit. Now, it's funny to me that most commentators, when they're talking about the beast ascending out of the bottomless pit, a lot of times they're referring to Satan, but Satan's not in the bottomless pit. Satan is loose, going to and fro throughout the world, looking for people to devour. So he's not in the bottomless pit. But the beast comes up out of the bottomless pit. This is a powerful demonic spirit, probably in rank next to Satan himself, who was held, evidently, bound in the bottomless pit, but released during the last days. Because notice, it's the beast that was, presently is not, John's time, but is going to come back in the future. Now, some commentators have actually suggested, and I think they might be closer to the truth than some of the others who are saying, no, this is a reference to the empire. The empire doesn't seem to fit. Some have suggested that perhaps the spirit that possessed Nero, some have suggested Judas, and some have gone further back to Antiochus Epiphanes, who was a great persecutor of the Jews around 165 BC. Some have suggested that that's perhaps what's being referred to here. And, you know, I think that they might be onto something, because I think clearly we're talking about a person, if you will, a spiritual person, obviously, not a human being. But we're talking about a demonic spirit here. The one that was, presently is not in John's day, but is going to come and ascends out of the bottomless pit. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is. So in the future, somehow there's going to be some knowledge, it seems, or some understanding that this person, however you want to refer to this entity, this person was here before, who was, is not when John writes, but is coming in the future. And we're going to see in a moment more on that. But now he goes on and he says this in verse 9. He says, here's the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. And then it says, they are also seven kings. Now, my translation reads, and yours perhaps would too, if you use the New King James or the King James. Verse 10 reads, there are also seven kings. That is not a proper translation. It's not that there are seven mountains and seven kings. It's there are seven mountains who are also seven kings. So this is interesting. Now, again, many commentators, because you have this reference to seven mountains, Rome was known as the city upon which which was built upon the seven hills. And so immediately there's this connection in the minds of many commentators that this is undoubtedly a reference to Rome. I think Rome is definitely included in here, but I don't think it is really here specifically referring to Rome. Although Rome was built on the seven hills later, a few of the other hills across the Tiber River were added, and, you know, it was more than seven. But the word here is not hills, the word is mountains. And if you go back in the scripture, it's interesting that when you find the word mountain, many times it is a reference to a kingdom. The Lord said in Isaiah that I will destroy the mountain that covers all people. This kingdom of darkness that's over all of the people. In the prophecy of, you remember the vision or the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had, and the stone that strikes the image in its feet and grinds it to powder, and the stone that struck the image becomes a great mountain and fills the whole earth. That's a reference to the kingdom of Jesus Christ when he returns. So mountain is often used of a kingdom, and of course the kingdom would have kings as well. But listen to what he says. He says, concerning these kings, five have fallen. One is, at the present time that John writes, one is, and the other has not yet come, and when he comes, he must continue a short time. The beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth, and he is connected to the seven, and he is going into perdition. Very, very difficult to understand exactly what this is referring to. The best thing that I have read on this has to do with the kingdoms, the great world empires that ruled over Israel. And it's very interesting that it fits the number perfectly. It says there are seven, and at the time that John wrote, he said five have fallen. If you think back in history, you first of all have the Egyptians with Pharaoh ruling over Egypt. Ruling over Israel. Then you have Assyria, the Assyrian Empire with Sennacherib, leading Israel, the northern kingdom, into captivity. Then you have the Babylonian kingdom with Nebuchadnezzar, carrying Judah off into captivity. Then you have the Persian kingdom with Darius, the Medo-Persian kingdom with Darius. Then you have the Grecian Empire with Alexander the Great. Those are five. Five have fallen. One is, of course, that would be a reference to Rome. And the other has not yet come. The other being that next ruler over this new empire that is going to arise. And it seems to fit to me better to understand it that way. So there's coming another, a seventh kingdom, a seventh empire, and that will be the revived Roman Empire. But that is going to be relatively short-lived, and the beast who is of the seven but is actually the eighth one, he will come and he will take complete and total authority over this final empire. So, he tells us now about the 10 horns. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. Now, maybe you remember back in Daniel's prophecy, the dream of Nebuchadnezzar and the image. You remember the great image with the head of gold and the chest of silver and the arms and the legs of brass and the thighs of iron and the feet and the toes of iron and clay. And remember, there were the 10 toes on that image, and we're told there that it would be in the days of the kings, these kings, the toes representing the kings. It's a parallel picture right here with the 10 horns. The 10 horns on the beast are the same thing as the 10 toes on the image. And so again, we go back to this idea that there is going to be a confederation of nations with 10 kings ruling over them, and they are going to reign temporarily, and they are going to be the ones to turn that empire over to the beast. So before the Antichrist comes, this power will have come, will have developed. He will not necessarily be the one to bring it all together initially. It will have developed before he comes, it seems. And then they, at a given point, are going to give their authority back over to him. So these are of one mind. They will give their power and authority to the beast. These kings will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And those who are with him are called, chosen, and faithful. Then he said to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. And the 10 horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot, make her desolate and naked, eat her flesh, and burn her with fire. For God has put it into their hearts to fulfill his purpose, to be of one mind, and to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. So here's an interesting twist in the whole thing. This harlot, this religious element is going to be hated by the kings, and they are going to destroy this harlot. But this will open the door then, or this will be the precursor to the establishing of the actual worship of the beast promoted by the false prophet. It all fits in perfectly. But notice the last verse. And the woman whom you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. The woman that you saw is a great city. I think here it is undoubtedly Rome. And ruling over the kings, not in a military sense or in a governmental sense, but ruling over them in a spiritual sense, having this great spiritual authority. Now, again, this stuff shouldn't surprise us, because this has happened many times over in history. And it's even happened to some degree from Rome after the breakup or the dissolving of Imperial Rome. Then you had the development of the Holy Roman Empire. And the popes themselves, for many, many centuries, ruled over the kings of the earth. They ruled over those princes and those rulers in what we know today as Europe. And in the East, with the Eastern Empire, there was a split in 1054 between the East and the West. The same thing was true in the East. From Constantinople, they ruled over those kings in that whole eastern region until Islam arose. And then, of course, there were long centuries of war between the Islamic powers and the Byzantine powers. So all of this stuff that's already occurred is going to it's going to occur once again. It's all going to come together. And I believe that Rome, and I'm going to go out on a limb here and maybe get a few people upset, but I think even more specifically, we're talking about Vatican City. Vatican City, I believe, is what's being referred to here. And of course, that's part of Rome. But it's a separate sovereign nation, interestingly enough. And what we're talking about here, though, is that it will become the center. It will become the headquarters for this religion that will be basically an amalgamation of all of the religions of the world will come together. And I think they will be based right there out of Vatican City. I've been to the Vatican. I've been to St. Peter's. And I will tell you, St. Peter's is one of the most magnificent buildings in the world. But I'll tell you, it is presently, it is a massive center of idolatry. All you got to do is walk around there and, you know, you would never, if you understand the scriptures, you know, if you know what the Bible says about God and the true worship of God, you don't make the connection between what's happening there and what we're told in the Bible, because there it is a very blatant and obviously idolatrous situation. So it's going to continue to go in that direction. And it's going to be Romanism, Protestantism, all of the various other isms, the cults and all of those kinds of things, along with all of the different Hinduism and Buddhism and Islam will be there as well. But that will be the center, the religious center. I believe that that's what's being talked about here in Revelation chapter 17. But you see, what's going to happen is that is going to be destroyed by the 10 kings, because in the end, the beast requires that people worship him directly and him only. You see, this will be an indirect sort of a worship. It'll be a false worship in that it's everyone in this massive religious system will have rejected the biblical Christ, but there'll still be ideas of gods and, you know, it'll be sort of all roads lead to God. This is some of the stuff that we have right now, but it's all going to come together as one massive system. But there's a point when the Antichrist will not tolerate even that. He will require that the whole world worship him directly rather than receiving worship indirectly. You see, Satan, for all of these centuries, has been, he is the god of this age, as the Bible tells us. And men are worshiping him and serving him, but most of them are doing it indirectly. They don't really necessarily realize that what they're doing, but that is what they're doing. But it's sort of an indirect thing. He's not happy with that. He wants the same kind of worship that God has. Direct, personal, volitional worship. And that's what he is going to require, and he will not settle for anything less than that. And that's what will bring this part of the system will collapse, and then he will take the place of that, or the worship of him will take the place of that. And this is where I agree with J. Vernon McGee. He said this, let me read it to you. He said, "I personally believe that Mystery Babylon is Rome, and that when it goes down in the midst of the Great Tribulation, the religious center shifts to Jerusalem, because it is at Jerusalem that the false prophet will put up his image of the Antichrist to be worshipped. Commercial Babylon is ancient Babylon, rebuilt as the commercial capital of the world. This city is the final capital of the political power of the beast." I agree with him there. He says that what's going to happen is when the 10 kings destroy the harlot, the center of worship is going to shift back over to Jerusalem. And of course, that, you know, being worshipped in Rome isn't good enough for the devil, because Jerusalem is the city of the great king. He wants to be worshipped in Jerusalem. And that's why that temple will be rebuilt. And that's why that image will be placed in the temple there. It's interesting, though, this quote from Vernon McGee is from probably the 70s, maybe the early 80s. And listen to what he says. He's talking now. He came to the conviction for a long time. He had disregarded the idea that Babylon itself might be rebuilt. He thought that that was a wrong view. But later on in life, he changed his opinion. And listen to what he said, writing this in the 70s. He said, a few years ago, it seemed rather far-fetched that the power could reach back into the Middle East. But since then, we have experienced a shortage of energy. And when they cut off the oil supply, the whole world feels it. They wield tremendous power. The wealth of the world is moving into that particular area because of the price of oil. It could well become the great commercial capital of the world. Now, you see, here we are. We're in the United States. We're, you know, just down the road from Los Angeles and just, you know, not too far from San Francisco. We can travel cross country and be in New York City, or we can go to Chicago, or, you know, we can get on a plane and go to London or Paris or Milan or, you know, and you know, for so long, these have been the centers of commercialism. These have been the centers of finance and all of that. But the reality is that's all changing. That's all shifting. I read an interesting article today on Dubai. Listen to this. Since the establishment of the United Arab Emirates in 1971, Dubai has developed a distinct identity as a modern and dynamic emirate. Dubai now enjoys a global reputation as an economic hub and an excellent location for investment. Dubai has successfully developed its status as a major city, enhancing the well-being of its people and creating an environment that attracts businesses and individuals. It is the home to the world's largest skyscraper right now, and it is to be the home in the near future of the world's largest bridge. Now, here's my point. I don't think Dubai's Babylon, but it's really close. It's really close, and it is becoming a financial center in the world. The Middle East is going to come back around, because this is what we always forget. When we talk about the ancient Roman Empire, when we talk about the European Union, when we talk about all of this, we forget that all of those Middle Eastern countries, they were part of the Roman Empire as well. And it seems like we're always leaving that out of the equation. But we've got to bring it back in. And looking at that, looking at the website there and looking at what's happening in Dubai, I think, my goodness, man, this is just, you know. And as I mentioned to you before, with the situation in Iraq, with the UN's intention ultimately to build a cultural center there where ancient Babylon once stood. I mean, all of it, you know, it just seems far too coincidental to be a coincidence. It seems that it's moving in the direction that God said it would. And so, it'll take me just a couple of seconds to read through chapter 18. Because I'm not stopping here. So hold on. Bear with me for just a minute. After these things, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illuminated with his glory. And he cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and has become a dwelling place of demons, a prison for every foul spirit, and a cage for every unclean and hated bird. So it'll be the place of incarceration for the demons after it's destroyed. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, and lest you receive her plagues. For her sins have reached to heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Render to her just as she rendered to you, and repay her double according to her works. In the cup which she has mixed, mix double for her. In the measure that she glorified herself and lived luxuriously, in the same measure give her torment and sorrow. For she says in her heart, I sit as queen and am no widow and will not see sorrow. Therefore, her plagues will come in one day. death and mourning and famine, and she will be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. The kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived luxuriously with her will weep and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing at a distance for fear of her torment, saying, "Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour your judgments have come." And the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore. Merchandise of gold, silver, precious stones, pearls, fine linen, purple, silk, scarlet, every kind of citron wood, every kind of object of ivory, every kind of object of most precious wood, bronze, iron, and marble, and cinnamon and incense, fragrant oil, frankincense, wine and oil, fine flour, wheat, cattle, sheep, horses, chariots, and bodies and souls of men. Babylon will become the commercial center of the world once again. It's hard for us to think about that. You know, it's hard for us to think about anything but Wall Street and the Dow and all of that sort of stuff. But you know what? Here's the thing. It all started in Babel. The rebellion started in Babel. It will end in Babel. You know, I remember some years ago seeing that this was the craziest thing. And there's something even more recent that somebody told me about. I can't remember it. But there was a there was an ad for, it was some kind of technology with a computer or something. And it actually said on it, I think it was talking about global communication. It actually said in the ad, this was the little quip in the ad, reversing the Babel effect. We're reversing the Babel effect. What happened at Babel? Man's attempt to build a tower higher than God was foiled because God confused the languages and dispersed people around the world. Now, what's happening today? Communication. We can communicate with anybody, anywhere. I have this little thing on my computer where I can type in English and it will translate into any language I want it to translate into. It's astounding. You see, this is what's happening. It's all coming together. And notice all of this stuff that's described here. This is all luxurious. These are all luxurious items. So there's going to come this point in the future, and I'm not saying that some of the previous centers are not going to still have relevance, but you know, nowadays if you've got an Italian suit or I got this perfume in Paris or something like that, whoa, boy, that's great. Hey, in the future it's like, hey, this is a Babylonian suit right here. You know, yeah, I got these I got this ring in Babylon. You know, that's what they're going to be talking about in the future. So it's astounding to see the way these, and again, you know, and just giving you an example of Dubai, like I'm saying, I mean, these guys are, I think they're showing what potentially can be done in that region. It is, of course, right in that very region. And so it goes on, and we're going to just read the next 10 verses, and then we're finished. The fruit that your soul longed for has gone from you, and all the things which are rich and splendid have gone from you, and you shall find them no more at all. The merchants of these things who became rich by her will stand at a distance for fear of her torment, weeping and wailing and saying, "Alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen, purple, scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, for in 1 hour such great riches came to nothing." Every shipmaster, all who travel by ship, sailors, and as many as trade on the sea stood at a distance and cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, "What is like this great city?" They threw dust on their heads and cried out, weeping and wailing and saying, "Alas, alas." Now, this term "alas" is a word that describes anguish and distress of soul. You know, it's like when the stock market crash and people commit suicide and things like that. That's what they're talking about here. And just like in New York City, when those planes hit those towers and then a few hours later, those towers were lying in rubble. People were, "Alas, how could this happen? How could something like this happen to these great towers and this great city?" Well, the whole of Babylon is going to be consumed. And men are going to be overwhelmed because all that they have put their trust in, all that they have put their hope in, all that they have worked so hard for, it's going to be over in a day. It's going to be over in an hour, is what we're told here. Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her. Then a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, thus with violence the great city Babylon shall be thrown down and shall not be found any more. The sound of harpists, musicians, flautists, trumpeters shall not be heard in you anymore. No craftsman of any craft shall be found in you anymore. And the sound of a millstone shall not be heard in you anymore. It's interesting. You go back to Genesis and you remember the story there when Cain went out from the presence of the Lord. His descendants, they developed music and they developed all of these different things to entertain themselves and to keep themselves from thinking about God. Notice what happens here. All of that stuff is silenced. It's all brought to nothing. The light of a lamp shall not shine in you anymore. The voice of a bridegroom and a bride shall not be heard in you anymore. For your merchants were the great men of the earth, for by your sorcery all the nations were deceived, and in her was found the blood of the prophets and the saints and of all who were slain on the earth. And so all of the blood of the saints and the prophets from all of the centuries, it will all be brought and laid before this final world power where they will have slaughtered the people of God, no doubt by the millions in that period that's yet to come.